here this morning we announced that we're going to be doing the completion of 1 Timothy at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning and 7 o'clock on Wednesday. And then we're going to start into the wisdom literature, namely the book of Proverbs. So let's please turn to Proverbs. This is a book of the Bible that is very probing and yet wonderful fun to study because of its insight into our natures. We did the two other wisdom books this morning, which is Job and Ecclesiastes, and now we're ready to look at the book of Proverbs. And the first thing we want to ask, is there an outline, is there a structure to the book of Proverbs? And the answer is, yes, there is. Part one of Proverbs consists of a prologue. The prologue is the part of the book that tells you, here's where we're going. Here's why I'm writing. Here is the intention of the whole thing. And the prologue is chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. And that prologue, in turn, divides into three parts. Part 1 is the title of the book. The first word of this book is the word mashal, and it's the word that is translated the Proverbs of. So the title we'll look at first, and we'll want to ask and answer, is Proverbs a good title for the book? And the answer is going to be, in a limited sense, yes, but not really in the fullest sense of the word when we see what the word Proverbs means in English. And then we'll look at the Hebrew word, which is the word mashal, and this is a collection of mashal. Finally, or second, the author takes a good deal of time to give us his purpose. Here is what the book ought to do for you. And that purpose of the book is expressed in infinitive phrases. Notice beginning at verse 2, to know. And the idea is for the purpose of knowing wisdom. Line 2, to discern. Verse 3, to receive instruction. Verse 6, to understand. So notice a very heavy section on what the book is all about. And we will find out that the purpose is twofold. And that purpose will revolve about developing mental skill for living and moral skill for living. We'll come to that tonight. And then third is the motto of the entire book. And the motto is verse 7. Title, verse 1. Purpose, 2 through 6. The motto of the verse of the entire book is in verse 7. The fear. And the word fear means respect and honor and reverence. Reverence for the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise that. And therefore, for a truly intelligent man, a truly intelligent man is a man who respects and reverences Yahweh, the God of the Old Testament. That's the prologue. Then we come immediately following the prologue to what we call the teacher's introduction. The teacher's introduction, and the scene is that of pupil and teacher. And the teacher gives an introduction before he starts to give us the Proverbs. And the teacher's introduction is in 1:1, or really 1:7, through chapter 9, verse 18. Through 9:18. This is the teacher's introduction to the book. And he will give many maxims. The picture is going to be the teacher is wisdom personified. And wisdom comes in the streets, it comes into your home, and cries out and says, will you please hear me? My name is Wisdom, and I want to be heard, and I plead to be understood and heard. Now, if you look at chapter 10, notice that we move from the teacher's introduction to the Proverbs themselves. Chapter 10, verse 1. And we simply call this the first Solomonic collection of Proverbs. So verse 1 of chapter 10 says the Proverbs of Solomon. And he begins to give little pithy, short maxims or sayings that work. And so the teacher's introduction is followed by the Solomonic Proverbs. And so we have Proverbs themselves. I'll put first Proverbs of Solomon. And the first Proverbs of Solomon begin at chapter 10 and verse 1, and they extend through 22 verse 16. Now, in the first 9 chapters, you can teach Proverbs much like you could teach any other book, because it's a narrative, and it is a continuous narrative, and you can teach it in that way. However, when you come to the Proverbs, there is a set of scattered, pithy sayings. For example, throughout the book, and scattered throughout the book, is the Kasil. The Kasil is the man who is truly a fool. But he doesn't arrange it all under one chapter. He'll say a word about the fool in chapter 10, maybe skip over 8 or 10 verses and another verse about the Kasil or the fool, and then many, many more. So the style changes with chapter 10, verse 1 through 22:16. And if you'll turn to 22:16, I'll show you why we change at that point. Is the end of the first Solomonic collection of Proverbs. And then in 22:17 through 24:34, it's the precepts of the sages. And Solomon per se ceases to speak, and he begins to say, let me give to you, notice verse 17, incline your ear and hear the words of the wise. And the words of the wise go through chapter 24, verse 34. 24:34. So let's simply put here, are the words of the sages. And this is the collection of the sayings of the wise men of Israel. And it begins in 22:17, and it extends through 24:34. The words of the sages, the wisdom given by the wise men of Israel. Now notice what happens in chapter 25. We come back to where we left off, and chapter 25 verse 1 says, these are the Proverbs of Solomon. And so we come back to the second Solomonic collection. So the first is in 10 through 22. Then an interruption for the words from the sages or words of the wise. And now we come to the second Proverbs section or the second collection of Solomonic Proverbs. And that goes through 29:27. 25 through 29. Then, with chapter 30, we begin with the section that we will call the appendices. Part 6 is made up of appendices. And it's things that need to be said about various subjects. And it forms an appendix to the rest of the book, and that is in chapter 30 through chapter 31. And if you'll begin with chapter 30, verse 1, notice how the theme moves away once again from the words of Solomon to the words of someone else. And so chapter 30, verse 1. The words of Agur, the son of Jaca, the oracle, the man declares to Ithiel and Ithia to Ural. And that extends down through verse 9. And essentially, it may be called a dialogue with a skeptic. It's a dialogue with a skeptic. One who does not believe these things, or at least doubts them, and that's chapter 30, verses 1 through 9. Then the second thing that adds in the appendices is a little section that we call the numerical proverbs. The numerical proverbs. And the numerical proverbs are made up of chapter 30, verses 10 through 33. And you don't have to read very far to see why do you call them the numerical proverbs. Well, notice coming down in chapter 30, verse 10, they begin, and you have verse 15. And here's why they are called numerical proverbs. The leech has two daughters. Give, give. There are three things that will not be satisfied, four that will not say enough. Coming down to verse 18. There are three things which are too wonderful for me, four which I do not understand. Verse 21. Under three things the earth quakes, and under four it cannot bear up. Verse 24. Four things are small on the earth, but they're exceeding wise. And he gives what those are. And in verse 29 through verse 33, beginning with verse 29, there are three things which are stately in their march, even four which are stately when they walk. And so down through verse 32, you have what we know as the numerical proverbs that talk about three and then finally about four. The third part of the appendices is the classic section on the ideal woman. And that is chapter 31. Or all of chapter 31. Sometimes you all ask me questions that are so good that I wish you wouldn't ask them. Teresa made the comment, I don't know what we were doing. Didn't you? You don't know what the comment was. You don't know what I'm going to say. You don't know what I'll tell you that you told me. Still okay? Okay. That's right. She said, how come that Solomon was so wise and did so many dumb things? Isn't it ironical that this man who couldn't keep one wife, he had a new wife about every night of his life. And you say, that is stupid. And this guy writes a chapter that is a classic on the ideal woman? How can we put these together? Well, let me ask you this. Is it unusual to know truth and not practice it? Is that a strange phenomena? Why, certainly in my life, all the truth that I know I practice, don't you? Well, you know good and well that it is possible to be very wise and yet do very dumb things. And therefore, I take it that the book of James, as Lee pointed out last weekend, is so similar to Proverbs. And you can see why. James is concerned about people who know a lot, but they don't practice anything. And he goes back to the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, particularly the book of Proverbs, to teach that particular thing. Okay, there we are. There is structure to Proverbs. The prologue is going to be very important, giving the title, the purpose, and the motto. The teacher's introduction will be a narrative section. And notice it's different in that when I say narrative, it's a connected discourse. Look at chapter 1, for example. And while we think of Proverbs as very brief sayings, and many of them are, it can also be an extended narrative. Chapter 1, verse 7, verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Verse 10. Continuation. My son, if sinners can entice you. You come down to verse 15, and he says, my son. And that goes all the way through verse 19. So the first nine chapters will be able to teach them much as we do any other book. We'll say, look, we're going to look at Romans 12, 1 through 7, and it's a united narrative together. The book of Proverbs is that for the first nine chapters. Then it begins with the first Solomonic collection in 10 through 22. Then he steps aside and says, let me tell you what the sages have said. Let me tell you what the wise men throughout Jewish history have taught. And he does that through chapter 24. Then he comes back to the second Solomonic collection. And then he says, now we're going to have an appendices. And we're going to have two men dialoguing. One is going to be a skeptic, one a believer. And that is in verses 1 through 9. And then under the structure of 3 and 4, we put together the numerical proverbs. And then finally, to close out the book, we have the ideal woman dealt with in the final chapter. Now, when we dealt with Proverbs before, we recognized the fact that there are many character sets. The naive, it means the open-minded, and not open-minded in the simple way that we ought to be open-minded, but to be open-minded, and there's a person that believes anything you pour into his head. And therefore, the naive or the simple will be a character set. We've all believed foolish things, but some people are just set up to be naive, and anything you tell them, they believe. When I was in high school, we used to seek out the simple girls, the girls that would believe anything. And we would say, would you like to go up on Cliff Drive? And you can see the Missouri River, and we can watch the submarine races. And the simple girl will do that, and she'll say, sure, let's do that. And you get up there, you park, and where are the submarines? And you put your arm around her and put her in the right direction, and there you go for the evening. That's the simple. Have you ever heard of at a camp, let's go out up into the dark hill on a what? A snipe hunt? And you build this girl. Now, when you see the snipe, you need this bag, and you're going to catch the snipe and bring him back. Of course, there is no such thing as a snipe. It's simply get away to get the girl who is simple-minded and will believe most anything into a position that you want her, enough said. But nonetheless, the book of Proverbs says there's a character set. We all believe foolish things, but some people are just so empty-minded that they'll believe anything. We have a good expression for it in English. We say, what an airhead. Well, the book of Proverbs deals with airheads. And it tells that they believe about anything. It deals with the person who is a sluggard and takes him to the ant to learn lessons and gives colorful metaphors. Remember, one of the characteristics of Proverbs is it put things in a way that you can never forget it. And therefore, he points out the one who never completes a job. He goes out, he hunts, he kills his prey, he brings his prey back home, and he is so lazy and so not finishing the job, the prey spoils and rots. Or another colorful way of putting it is he dips in the dish, and this would be with the pita bread, pita-like bread. He dips in the dish, gets the morsel in the pita bread, but he never finishes the job because he never manages to bring it to his mouth and eat it. And so we have things that are hard to forget. You can just see this guy dipping in the morsel and getting it in the bread, and sitting there and then go to sleep. And pretty soon he has forgotten to ever bring it to his mouth. He never, ever, ever finishes the job that he begins. Now, I think you can see some of the practicality of this for other people, because all of us always complete the job that we start on, don't we? A lot of my life is filled up, fortunately not in terms of the study of the Word, but many other things I've said I'm going to do. I often will go about with a half-waxed car. I'm going to shine this baby up and I get the hood done. And then something else comes on, and a year later, the hood is polished, but the rest of the car is still untouched. And Proverbs addresses that sort of thing. There are about 10 places where Proverbs uses the word in Hebrew for afterwards. It's a little bit hindered, covered up in our translation, but it's the idea of consequences. You did this. Have you ever thought that there's an afterward to it? That what will happen in the future? And Proverbs goes through about 10 afterwards. The afterwards of doing different things. One of them, for example, is you don't guard your mouth. You say the wrong thing. Does not guarding your mouth and saying the wrong thing ever have an afterwards to it? Does it ever have consequences that follow? You can never again correct them. I have learned that when a girl or a guy wants to get married, and the guy or the girl, one of the two, I look at them and say, what a jerk. But what do you do if you say, what a jerk you're dating, and they marry them? She will forever remember, you call my husband a jerk. And those are words that have a terrible afterwards with them, and it's one of the regrets of life. And so we'll be building some of those characters that are found in the book of Proverbs. So let's go now to the prologue to the book. The prologue is made up of three things, and let me expand them just a little bit and then expand them again. Please note that one of the best ways I think to teach is to say, all right, let's bite off a piece that's as big as seven verses. It divides off from the rest and may be termed the prologue to the book. We've taken a big bite. Now let's break the bite down into smaller bites. And you have the three smaller bites. We've already listed them as title in verse 1, purpose in 2 through 6, and the motto in 7. Good way to teach, to break down the large section, then break down the large section into smaller bites. And it's much like you would do on your plate. You don't try, oh, some people do, you don't try to get an 8-ounce or 6-ounce filet in one bite. Some people do attempt it, and they take enormous bites and it looks gross. Then, of course, there are other people that mutilate the food first. One of the most, and I don't eat breakfast often, but one thing that just irritates the life out of me is to sit next to someone in a restaurant who's ordered 2 eggs over easy. And then here begins the operation. They cut and cut and mix and stir until you got this sickening mixture on your plate. Are any of those kind of people here? Oh, you guys. Why do you have to mutilate the egg and mix it up into a... Betty will do this with sauerkraut. I love sauerkraut and mashed potatoes and pork. But I do not like the operation, David does it too, that takes the sauerkraut and the juice and the mashed potatoes and takes 20 minutes to whip them up into... You want to say, is it going or coming? But nonetheless, one of the good ways in teaching is to take the big bite and now break it down into small bites that are consistent, and then to break those down once again. And in beginning this, I want to break down the purpose part in a typical Hebrew manner. It is very typical in the Hebrew language to give a short summary. You might think of it in terms of the newspaper that gives the headlines, here's what it's all about, a short summary, and then breaks it down into parts. And the short summary is found in 1:2. And we'll find out in our careful study of the book that verse 2 divides into two parts. Number 1, to know wisdom and instruction. And we'll find out that that part of verse 2 is how to develop moral skill. How to develop moral skill. The second part begins in 2b, to discern the sayings of understanding. And this is learning to develop mental skill. And so the book of Proverbs begins by saying, I have two things that I want to teach you and that I want to accomplish by means of this book. I want you to become very skillfully in your moral relationships. I want you to develop sensitivity, discretion, how to judge things. And I want you also to develop mental skill, to know how to think, to know how to hear wisdom and discern it and break it down. And that is the short summary found in Proverbs 1:2, A and B. To know wisdom and instruction, that's moral skill, and to discern the sayings of understanding, that is mental skill. Now, no good Hebrew writer, certainly in the Old Testament, would settle with that. That's not a good didactic procedure, because you want to give your short summary, and then you want to give an expanded summary. And you're going to be talking about the same things, except you're going to expand the summary. And the expanded summary is to take the first idea to develop moral skill. Now let's expand that, and it is expanded out in chapter 1, verses 3 through 5. To receive instruction, to give prudence, a wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. And verses 3 through 5 are the expansion of point 1. I want you to develop moral skill. And he's coming back at what is inherent in the Hebrew language is that points are made by repetition. Very, very frequently. A thing is said. They don't have a lot of adjectives. They would not say, that is a beautiful flower. They would say 2 times, it's a flower, it's a flower. And though we've been to it many times, keep your finger here in Proverbs and look at Exodus 1. A good example of Hebrew method of writing to make the point. There's only one point being made in this verse, but it's made by repetition over and over. The main point is Israel was prolific. She really grew. And how does he put it? Verse 7. The sons of Israel were fruitful, and they increased greatly, and they multiplied, and they became exceeding mightily. So the land was filled with them. Now that is not a verse of 7 points. That's a verse of 1 point repeated 7 times to say, hey, they really grew. And that repetitious idea is important in all of your Hebrew writings. And therefore, you often have a short summary and expanded summary. Look at the book of Genesis. The Bible opens with that style. Genesis 1.
And we begin with a short summary that says it all. Then we come back to an expanded summary. Verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That is the short summary. And then you begin in verse 3, for example, to go day by day by day by day and break down the creation of the heavens and the earth into periods of time. That is typical method in Hebrew. Short summary followed by an expanded summary of what you mean to teach. And therefore, going back to Proverbs, in the opening section, we have the title, Proverbs, and the purpose is to give you mental skill and moral skill. The book of Proverbs ought to give us a mental workout. A lot of things to think about and develop, and it also ought to build up the moral skills that the believer needs in functioning in life. Then you come to the motto. And the motto in verse 7 simply says this: there is only one difference between a wise man and a fool. And it isn't in his degrees. PhDs can be fools. Grade schoolers with no education that continue that throughout life can be fools. But to the book of Proverbs, no amount of learning makes you moral. Because if you're not moral, you're not good. If you're not moral, you're a fool. And therefore, we have universities who are staffed with PhDs who are fools. And notice verse 7 makes you place yourself in one of these things and says the root of knowledge is what? The fear or respect for Yahweh. Any man who does not respect Yahweh is, in the first half or the second half of verse 7, he is a fool because he despises wisdom and instruction. Now, that doesn't mean you may not be able to learn biology. You may not be able to learn math that is even beyond your own understanding, but you can learn math from a fool. From the standpoint of the book of Proverbs, if you're not good, you're not wise. And wisdom hasn't that much to do if a person knows everything and it is morally bad. To the book of Proverbs, he is a fool. And this is the motto that carries throughout the entire book, all the way through, clear to chapter 31. And it's going to point out that if you don't respect the Lord, you can only be classified as a fool. Now, with that in mind, let's begin with the title. The title. And at the risk of being repetitious, I hope you see the way I'm trying to teach. Let's take the big bite, the prologue. Now let's take a smaller bite of the three parts of the prologue, and let's look at the title. And we need to see that title from two standpoints. Number one, from the standpoint of the English. And then from the standpoint of the Hebrew word that is used here. From the standpoint of the English, the book is called Proverbs. And I'm going to make a line between the two parts of the word proverb. It is made up of the word pro, which means before. And it means before in the sense of instead of or in place of. So let's put before or instead of. And I just belched, but I can't forget you people who take your egg mutilated. Okay, it causes me gas. Okay, the word pro means instead of, and the word verb or verba means words. And the idea of the word then is verba is a short saying, and the resultant meaning is a brief saying instead of lots of words. And the English word that translates and means a short statement in place of a long lecture, a short pithy maximum in place of a very wordy statement is called a proverb. However, that does not match the Hebrew. And it doesn't match the Hebrew in the respect that it doesn't say enough. The Hebrew word for proverbs is mashal, M-A-S-H-A-L. Mashal. Now, if you look at a Hebrew Bible, you've got mashaleh, which is simply the plural form of the singular mashal. And what is a mashal? Well, the basic idea in a mashal is it's a comparison. And it always entails two things. It always entails a comparison between A and B, a comparison between this and that. And therefore, I have written out what we will use as a running definition throughout the book of Proverbs for what is a mashal. A mashal is an example of a historical event or a general truth that may be applied to a situation at hand. And it may put a general truth that will apply in many ways. It may say that if you stick your hand in a saw, it will cut it off. And that general truth is now applied to specific situations. And you begin to say, well, I better avoid sticking my hand in front of moving objects that are sharp and that could cut it off. That would be a mashal. The example is a historical event, a general truth that may be applied to a situation at hand. Now, a mashal can be a whole nation. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28. And we're looking at 28 and verse 37. And he's going to say that for people who disobey God, they have tragic consequences. And therefore, in chapter 28, verse 37, he makes an amazing statement. He says the whole nation of Israel, when they disobeyed God, becomes a mashal. You are an example of the tragic things. I saw a bumper sticker the other very good. It says, don't be discouraged if you're not a success. You can always serve as a bad example. And this is true. And you could be a mashal. And your whole life could exhibit how not to do things. Many, many people in their marriage are a wonderful exhibit of how not to choose a wife or how not to choose a husband. And it seems like it's just one mistake after another. And your parents may say, don't do this or you'll end up like Donald Joslin, who was principal at Crestview School for many, many years. Used to really get clear with parents and say, you know, if you don't get a hold of your son or your daughter, you know what's going to happen to them? They're going to grow up to be the same mess that you are. And he's simply saying, you're a mashal. You're an example of a historical event or a general truth that may apply to any situation at hand. For example, historical event, Israel came to the edge of the promised land. God said, I'll give it to you. And Israel did not believe. Is that a mashal? Is that an example for us? Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Oh, wait, I didn't read 28, did I? Or did I? Oh, okay, 28, 37. Deuteronomy 28, and we're looking at verse 37. And you, Israel, shall become a horror, a mashal. Our translation gives us a proverb, and a taunt among all the people whom the Lord your God will drive you. So the whole history of Israel becomes a mashal. It's an example. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians 10. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, speaking to the Corinthian church in the first century, I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud. That's a historical event. And all passed through the sea. And all were baptized into Moses. And all ate the same spiritual food. All drank the same spiritual drink. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased. And you ought to use that as a mashal. And therefore, it is a comparison. The book of Proverbs will use an ant is a wonderful mashal. The ant saves in times of want for times of lack. And that will be an example derived from a general truth about the ant that is a practical lesson for us. Now, let's go to the elements and say two more things about Proverbs. What are the elements in it? And I know we covered this morning, but it was in conclusion. And being in conclusion, I realize that many times what is done in the last 15 minutes is people are packing, you're thinking of the roast in the oven, and you're getting all ready to go. And so, four characteristics, I will not write them out because you've had them. Number one, Proverbs makes you pass a judgment on yourself. Look at Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1. And Proverbs will often say, you're this or this. There isn't any gray area. You're not in between, and therefore there is not a gray area. Proverbs forces us out of the gray areas and makes us say, I'm this or I'm this. Look at chapter 10, verse 1. What kind of sons are there? Well, Proverbs 10:1 says there's only two choices to make. And in verse 1, it says, a wise son makes his father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. So what are you? What are you? Are you wise or are you a fool? And we need to get used to this in the book of Proverbs because it is intended to force you to look in the mirror and say, fool or wise. It does not allow for gray areas. Number 2. They contain a shrewd concentration of truth. They are much like the bottle of milk you used to get where you'd find it on the front doorstep and you could lift it up and you could see the cream at the top and the top cream or top milk as the Dutch call it, the top milk, and then you see the rest of the milk. And often you've got a Pennsylvania Dutch cookbook, a Mennonite cookbook, and it is always saying, take the top milk and mix it in. And that means the cream in our language. And the book of Proverbs loves to concentrate truth into cream. And notice how it's done many times. We looked at the example of chapter 11, verse 1 this morning. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Do you know how to delight the Lord? Do you know how to be an abomination to the Lord? It's condensed truth. Practice a false balance or dishonesty and your abomination. Practice a just weight and you are his delight. Third, I heard one just recently. It's not inspired, but it was brilliant. It's a little boy who concentrated a great deal of wisdom in one sentence of one prayer. Lord, make the bad people good and make the good people nice. That's insight, isn't it? Have you ever seen people that are so good they make you sick? I want to go down the other side of the church because I feel like I'm going to be rebuked by their goodness. And his observation was, it's good for good people or bad people to be made good, but it's also kind of nice if the good people will also be nice. Third, they have a way of putting a truth into a statement that you can never forget. And we used this morning chapter 11, verse 22. Sometimes people can use metaphors that are so telling and so true. And if you can picture the first part of verse 22, as a ring of gold in a swine's snout. Can you see a beautiful, pure gold ring in the snout of a pig? And you look at that and say, that isn't consistent. You know, a pig is dirty. A pig is going to wallow. Why does this pig have a gold ring in its nose? It's not consistent. Well, he says, let me remind you that there's something else that is not consistent, and that is a beautiful woman who is an airhead. And you don't forget that very easily. It's hard to forget, and that's part of Proverbs. Four, Proverbs does not argue points, it makes points. Chapter 12, verse 1. This is pretty sharp point made. It doesn't argue it. It doesn't try to persuade you. It just makes a point that whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. Now that's not hard to understand, isn't it? It's very blunt and puts truth in a very terse manner. Now, in the closing 2 minutes, let's say something about the time of the writing of the Mashal. When in Israel's history was it written? It was written in one of the critical times. You know, our timeline goes through the end of Solomon's reign, at which time the kingdom split. And in that time of the divided kingdom, there was one characteristic. The priests did not teach. There was simply no teaching. Now you could say, what would people do who say, Lord, we are hungry for your truth. We want to know the truth. We go to the priest. We go to the temple, and it's not there. There is a lack of teaching. And so God said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will give you who love my word and love my person and love my law a little handbook. The handbook will be on moral skill in terribly depraved times. And that book is found in the book of Proverbs. All right, we'll pick up again next Sunday at 11 o'clock with the move past the title to the purpose of the book. Father, we're thankful for your word and your truth. In Christ's name, amen.